The views expressed in the following program do not necessarily represent those of the staff, management, or owners of WGBB.
And now, Sports Talk 1240.
Good evening and hello again, everybody. Welcome to Hour 2 of Sports Talk 1240 on WGBB Freeport, Long Island, New York. Bill Donahue taking you through the next hour on this Sunday night, the 10th of August. It's the debut of the new Sports Talk 1240. I hope you're enjoying it. Our engineer, Brian Graves, is across the way. We've got some great guests lined up for you tonight. Up first, we'll talk to one of the 1986 New York Mets, a star of the legendary Game 6 of the World Series that year, Kevin Mitchell. And in the second half, we'll welcome in one of the stars of the 1967 Impossible Dream Boston Red Sox, AL Pennant Winning Club. Their great third baseman, shortstop, Rico Petroselli, will join us. As always, before we begin, I invite you to follow me on my Facebook page, which is called The Talk of New York Sports. There you'll find sports information, trivia, sports and history, show information, and more. So stop by, give me a look, and more importantly, give me a like. You can now also follow me on Twitter at Talk of NY Sports, and all past segments can be heard on our new website, www.sportstalk1240.com. Well, we're waiting to get my first guest on the line. He was a member of the 1986 New York Mets. He was a star of the legendary Game 6, that famous Game 6 of the 1986 World Series, where he was rumored to be in the locker room changing. We'll find out about that forthwith after Keith Hernandez went down, Wally Backman went down. The Boston Red Sox were one out away from winning the World Series. In that crucial Game 6, they had already put up the sign at Shea Stadium saying, "Congratulations, World Champion Boston Red Sox." So my first guest, he was a member of the 1986 New York Mets, a star of the legendary Game 6, two-time All-Star, MVP of the National League in 1989, 234 Major League home runs. I welcome to Sports Talk 1240 tonight, Kevin Mitchell. Kevin, good evening.
Good evening to you all, man.
It's great having you with us.
It's not good evening. It's late for you guys.
Yeah, but it's not bright and early for you out there, right?
Yeah, we still got daylight.
Good for you. Good for you, my friend. Well, who'd you grow up rooting for, Kevin, as you grew up out in San Diego? Who were some of your influences, your favorite ball players when you were growing up?
I'll tell you one of them was Ron LaFleur.
Okay, yeah, I know Ron. I met him down in Florida a couple of times.
He's from St. Pete.
Yeah, right. And then what made you like Ron?
Well, just the way he came through to become a ball player, you know, being locked up in the prison system, you know, it was just, you know, something I really tipped my hat to him too.
Good ball player, great base stealer.
Yes.
Now, in Peter Golenbach's book, Amazing, one of your teammates, Gary Carter, gave you the nickname World for your ability to play all infield and outfield positions. Gary was a big fan of yours. Tell us a little bit about Gary, about being his teammate and about being around the kid.
Well, I'll tell you what, as a rookie there, you know, Gary has taught me a lot about the game. There was a bunch of veteran guys that really taught me how to prepare myself, because I didn't start prepare myself for the game, either pinch hitting or being thrown in the game, because it was something new to me, and Gary Carter was a good motivational guy for me. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's just, I was sad that he passed away. He passed away the same time my brother did. So they had basically the same thing. He had a brain cancer.
Okay. Now, wanted to know a little bit about Davey Johnson. Now, Davey wasn't a great disciplinarian, Kevin. Do you feel that things may have been different with the Mets after 1986 if there was a disciplinarian manager in Davey's spot, or do you think that things were good with Davey at the helm?
Davey invited me on that team in 86, and I have nothing bad to say about Davey. Davey was a good motivational manager for me.
Okay.
You know? And, you know, it's all good, you know?
Yeah.
Anybody that I played with on that team is all good, you know, as a young kid, you know, coming up.
Mm-hmm.
I have nothing bad to say about anybody that played on that team.
Let's talk about some of those guys. Let's talk about Doc.
Doc Gooden?
Yeah.
great pitcher, man, you know. Just an awesome guy, and, you know, every time I see him when I come to New York, he's always had something good to say, you know. And, you know, just, like I said, everybody on that team was a coach to me, and they helped me out a lot about the game.
Now, another guy that turned himself around, great ball player, great power, Darryl Strawberry.
The Straw Man.
Yeah.
Great ball player, man. I know the little incident that came out lately, you know, about me doing some cat or something, you know.
Oh, I was going to bring that up later. Okay, yeah.
I know you was.
You want to talk
I know you. Hey, I know you was. You was leading right into that. You trying to feed me right into that.
All right, you want to talk about the cat, Kevin? Let's talk about the cat. Okay.
Yeah, talk about the what? The catch?
No, we'll talk about the catch too, but on Twitter all day,
you know,
that's the only thing people want to talk about is the lousy cat. That's all people want to hear about, and it's disappointing to me.
It's all a myth, you know?
Okay.
It's something that just was made up, man, you know? I'm a grown man.
Right.
You know, I'm a man with integrity, you know? And
I know that.
I don't, you know, it's nothing, like I said, you know, if they was writing a book at that time, you know, that's good for them. I don't have nothing bad to say about Doc or Darryl. You know, I love Darryl like a brother, you know, and I always will, no matter what he says.
I should ask them about the cat is what I should do. See
yeah,
what they
and
have
Doc
to say.
Last year, Ron, you know, they said Doc made that up, you know.
Yeah,
and,
exactly.
And said it was all a lie, you know, but, you know, like I said, I don't know. I still got love for them, no matter how much they talk, you know, it doesn't matter, because I know that wasn't true, and, you know, I know what it's all for, you know?
Yeah, exactly. We won't even...
But don't go out and try to, you know, I'm not the person that thinks something like that is not going to bring me down.
Nah, I know, exactly.
And like I told you, I am a man with integrity, you know?
So. Definitely. How about Ray Knight? Ray Knight was another fiery man on that ball club, Kevin. Unfortunately, they let him go too after the 86 season in another ridiculous move.
Ray was a good man for me to have around. Like I said, one of the main guys that taught me a lot about the game was Ray.
Yeah,
he was even a coach for me when I was with Cincinnati, and he's still in my heart. Him and Nancy Lopez has got a place in my heart, man. Because, like I said, I always talked to him, you know, about anything. Ray was like somebody that was, if something was going wrong, I can go talk to.
Yeah.
So.
And another man of integrity, Kevin, exactly right there.
No doubt. No doubt. Yes.
Did you have a feeling, Kevin, back then that Wally Backman would be a managerial candidate and would be like the guy today that would be so sought after to be a manager?
I really thought he would be the manager of the Mets team.
Yeah.
You know, I managed against Wally Backman, too, in independent ball. And he's a great manager.
Yeah.
You know, a great manager. And so another guy, a fire plug, you know, and can get to the players. You know, he could take an average player and make him to a good player. You know, he knows how to talk to players because he was a player.
Mm-hmm.
So...
Another fiery guy, definitely. And,
No doubt, fire.
The same with McDowell. McDowell now is a successful pitching coach with the Atlanta Braves, right?
Yes, he is.
Yeah.
You know, I watch the Braves all the time, and I watch Roger. You know, and like I said, he wants them to be to have the same fire and attitude that he had when he was on the mound. You know, and that's why he's so successful.
We're speaking to the great Kevin Mitchell tonight. Now, let's get into Game 6 a little bit, Kevin. In the 10th inning of that ball game, Wally and Keith, they were retired for the first two outs. The rumor is that you went into the clubhouse. Now, we don't know, only you know what you were doing in there. The rumor is that you went to make your plane reservations. Who knows? But, they called you back to pinch hit for Aguilera. Now, Gary Carter singled. You came up, you got a base hit.
Yeah.
Right.
Oh, well, basically another miss.
What, that you were
I was inside the clubhouse when Mookie came and got me to tell me I was pinch hitting.
Okay.
But as far as being on the phone and doing other things was another miss.
Yeah, you know? Okay.
And, you know, how was I able to come on deck and still get a hit? You know, if I didn't know what was going on.
Exactly.
As a young kid, you know.
Right.
I mean, there's a lot of stuff that's been said about me that's not true. Like I said, you know, only I can defend myself, you know, if I go out there and talk about it.
Exactly. You have to set the record straight for these people, Kevin.
Yeah, no doubt. I really do, you know. And as I'm getting older, I'm just tired of people just mentioning my name and a bunch of negative stuff. I'm not a negative person. I'm a positive person. I put myself around positive people. Positive things are going to happen.
Definitely. Well, one thing positive is you could flat out rake, and that's what you did that night. Then Ray got up. He got a base hit. The wild pitch.
From first to third.
Right. Yeah. The wild pitch. Mookie almost gets hit, falls down, waving you in like a wild man. You come in
indeed.
To score.
Wild hair, too.
Yeah. You come in to score the tying run. Now, you're in the dugout. Bob Stanley's on the hill. Bob Stanley throws one. Mookie hits the little dribbler down to first base.
Buckner.
Now, how are you watching that? Where are you in the dugout, Kevin?
I'm right there in the dugout.
Yeah.
I'm right sitting there. I'm not sitting. I'm standing.
Now with Mookie.
I'm really watching Oil Can Boyd on the other side.
Okay. You're looking at Oil Can. Okay.
Yeah, because he's got on a shirt and a hat and some champagne in his hand.
Oh, okay, nice. He's all ready to go.
He's all ready to go.
Yeah, and then like I said during the intro, while we were dialing you up, that I think that they may be another myth. I thought that they flashed on the Shea scoreboard by mistake. Congratulations, Boston Red Sox, world champs.
Oh, I really didn't see all that.
Yeah, okay. So
yeah,
Oil Can Boyd's ready to roll.
Oil Can Boyd is ready to go.
He's single
he's
and ready to mingle.
The dugout.
Yeah.
He's just he's already Ocho Cinco, ready to go.
Yeah. Okay, now what did you think when Mookie hit that dribble? You figure it's all over.
Oh, yeah, most definitely. I mean, that's a sure glove over there.
Unbelievable, yeah.
As a rookie, I watched that guy play.
Yeah.
You know, Cubs. You know, and this guy was a sure hand over there, sure glove.
Unbelievable.
Once he touched your glove, it was like super glue.
I guess I thought it too, sitting at home watching it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Why wouldn't you?
No doubt.
And there it goes through. And what do you think when it goes through his legs, Kevin?
Oh, my God.
Unbelievable.
I mean, there's nothing else I can think about, you know. I'm already on the field.
Yeah. And here comes
trampled on.
And here comes Ray Knight. Yeah.
Here comes Ray Knight.
Yeah.
With those, I called him, what did I call Ray Knight? I called Ray Ray, but I always watch his cheeks when he's happy, man. His cheeks just bounce.
And there's, you know? I think Buddy Harrelson was trailing him.
And Buddy, here come Buddy. Because Buddy had just told me, watch for a wild pitch on Stanley, and I end up scoring the first. Right when he told me, Stanley threw a wild pitch, and I scored.
Just amazing. Yeah, that was unbelievable. One of the great moments in World Series history.
Oh, yeah, I had fun in New York, man. I used to call New York my second home. Now, as you get older, you're a little timid about New York, but I love them, though. The fans, if I wouldn't have played in New York, ain't no telling how I would have been as a ball player. But New York broke me in for all the other fields. The fans, they make you want to play.
They do.
And all they want is a winner. That's all they want.
We're starved right now. The New York fans, Kevin, they love talking about 1986 because they're really starved for a winner here. They really are. They treat Doc and Daryl and Darling and people like that, like they're, and Keith, like they're the kings because they're really starved for a winner. And that's why.
I understand that, but you know, I have never did anything for New York since I played for New York. Never invited me to do anything, so.
Well, that's the way the management, and Mookie wrote about it in his book, Kevin. The management kind of shuns the 1986 ball club. Why? I really don't know. You'd have to ask them, but that's the way it is. And,
If you wouldn't say I played for the Mets, I wouldn't even know it, man.
Yeah.
You know, my heart, I mean, the Giants do so much for me right now, and it's unbelievable what they do, man, you know, and, like I said, my heart bleeds orange.
That's terrible.
You know, because of what they do for me. New York has never done anything for me since I played for New York.
That's a shame. Were you disappointed to leave the Mets, Kevin?
I was. I really was, man. I really loved New York, and I never thought I would leave New York as a rookie. And
now, even though you went home to San Diego, you were disappointed to leave.
I was. I really was. I thought I wasn't going to leave New York. Me and Wally Backman talked about that during the World Series. And he just told me, Mitch, you're never going nowhere. They love you here.
Oh, boy.
I came home one year to Grandma's house, and I had a bunch of news people there. And I didn't know what was wrong. I thought something had happened. Grandma was sick or something. Come home, Channel 8, Channel 10 is sitting in front of Grandma's house, and I'd have been traded to the Padres. Kevin McReynolds.
Yeah.
And Sean Abner and Stanley Jefferson.
That's right. Yep.
So I didn't want to come home and play. I enjoyed New York, you know. And
they don't treat their heroes very well. They really don't, and it's a shame they don't.
Well, I don't consider, well, as much as they have done anything for me, so I was a hero, now I'm a zero to them, so. The old saying is, what have you done for me lately? So,
exactly.
I haven't done nothing for them.
Well, you had a heck of a year for the Giants. That's one thing for sure, Kevin. 47 home runs, 125 RBIs. The first Giant MVP since Willie McCovey in 1969. That was an amazing season. And certainly be congratulated for that. How was Roger Craig to play for?
Oh, my God, Roger. Roger was like family to me.
Yeah, great man.
He was very disciplined, but he didn't, you know, he'll let you know. He'll put you in your office, never front you. He'll put you in your office and talk to you.
Yeah.
All he wanted you to do is give me 100% out there on that field. I don't care what happens, but as long as I know you're giving me 100%, I'm fine. I'm happy with that.
That was during that season that we talked about the catch before. People also wanted to talk about the barehanded catch you made off Ozzie Smith. Now, I believe you ended up, you overran that ball?
Well, we was playing Ozzie in the gap, and I guess, I don't know who was pitching. I don't know if it's Scotty Gorelt or I don't know who was pitching. They threw him a split thing, and he sliced it down the line. You know, left-handed balls start foul, and they come back.
Yeah.
So I just ran to the corner. By the time I put my head up to look at the ball was already on my right side. I just stuck my glove up. You know, when you was a kid, you played wiffle ball in the boys' club and stuff like that. So that's all it was. I didn't even feel the ball. I was just really itching to get up to hit. You know, I ended up leading off that inning and hitting the home run off Tudor.
Is that what it was?
Yeah.
Wow.
And they didn't say nothing to me till I came in after I hit the home run. Terry Kennedy said, Mitch, do you realize what you just done? I said, yeah, hit a home run. He said, no, man. We don't see stuff like that. You should have turned around and flexed. Then Willie Mays called me and said, Mitch, I didn't teach you that.
Well, that's nice to get a call from Willie Mays,
Yes, everywhere I went, the fans booed me for using my glove.
Oh, that's a great story.
I still get remembered about the catch, and that's it. I tell people I used to hit, too.
And sure you did, yeah.
Yeah, I used to hit a little bit, you know. Wasn't what I really wanted, how I really wanted to finish my career, but I wanted to keep going, so.
That's the thing, yeah.
You know, things happen, you know. You get older, you get wiser, you know.
Well, what are you doing these days, Kevin?
I am working with kids down here, and I'm a hitting coach for the travel ball teams, some high school kids and college. And that's what I've been doing. It's a place called the Brickyard in San Diego.
Yeah.
And that's my passion. I've been offered jobs, but I just won't take them because this is my passion with the kids.
Teaching them to hit.
That's it.
Yeah.
Don't want them to make the same mistakes that I made in my life.
Well, they got a great teacher, I'll tell you that.
Hopefully God can keep blessing me every day to get up and go work with these kids. So.
Well, what I told you, Kevin, is exactly true. The fans, I know they're making a documentary. I want to have that young lady on my show as well, the young lady that's making that documentary about the 86 Mets. The fans are, they're starved for a winner here in New York. Everywhere that Doc and Daryl, Keith, Ronnie, people like that go, I've had Ed Hearn, Barry Lyons I've talked to on the show.
All good people.
Every last vestige of the 86 team, some of the younger fans don't even know what it's like to win with blue and orange because they've never seen it, you know?
And they always had good players. I mean, that kid Wright is like you see, a franchise player, man. He just needs somebody to help.
He's got nothing with him.
Nothing.
I feel bad for him, Kevin, because they've never given him anything. I mean, he's
I feel real bad for him.
He's bled.
You know?
He's bled for them. He's given him his heart and soul. They've promised him that they'd give him a winner, but they haven't given him anything, and it's really a shame.
I watched that game today. The Phillies came back on him, man, and you know,
it's a shame.
I mean, they're getting better and better every year, you know, with the players, you know, but. Like I said, you know, but Wright ain't getting no younger, you know?
No.
Hopefully he'd get in there and, you know, get some players in there. You guys got good pitching already. The young kids you guys got in New York. I like the kid that's hurt right now, but he hasn't pitched in a while. What do you have, Tommy John?
Matt Harvey.
He'll be back
next year. Yeah.
Yeah.
They have the makings of a good staff. Pitcher. They need some hitting, and that's always the case with the Mets, except in 86. You know that.
Yeah. Well, Wright can't do it by himself. It seems like he's out there playing like Hollow Man, like he's disappearing.
Exactly.
You know?
Like you said, he's not getting any younger.
Feel for him.
Well, Kevin, thanks for taking time out of your Sunday evening out there to talk some baseball with us, reminiscing about the great 86 Mets and those great names. I really thank you for being with us tonight.
Hey, I really appreciate it, you know, and I thank you guys for calling. You know, when I got that call from you, from New York, it's always good to talk to some people from New York.
And I'm sure the folks enjoyed hearing from you.
Okay, buddy. You guys take care of yourself, man.
You too,
get
Kevin.
A winner one day. All right.
Hang in there, buddy. Kevin Mitchell, ladies and gentlemen. Well, folks, again, Sports Talk 1240 next up in the second half. We'll talk to the great Red Sox third baseman shortstop from the 1967 pennant winners, Rico Petrocelli. Stay with us, folks.
Sports Radio New York and AM 1240 WBBB are proud to announce the new Sports Talk 1240, along with the launch of a brand new website at sportstalk1240.com. Check out our new site for information about upcoming shows, as well as easy access to past shows, articles, our live studio webcam, and more. Of course, be sure to tune in to Sports Talk 1240 every Sunday night from 8 to 10 p.m. on AM 1240 WGBB, or visit sportstalk1240.com for ways to listen to the live broadcast online or from your iPhone. We're excited about these new changes and hope you will be too.
So
So you're looking for a great club but don't want to go into Manhattan. Or you'd like to find a new restaurant to check out. Or you're buying a house here on Long Island and you'd like to find out about a certain area. Wouldn't it be nice if you could find out all the information in just one spot? Well, you can. LongIslandExchange.com. It's all you need to find out all about Long Island. LongIslandExchange.com for hotspots, classifieds, news, and more. LongIslandExchange.com is designed with only the Long Islander in mind. Get the best of Long Island. LongIslandExchange.com. Discover Long Island all over again at LongIslandExchange.com.
If you're trying to quit smoking, dipping, or chewing tobacco, you don't have to do it alone. Nicotine Anonymous is a 12-step program of recovery that meets regularly in your area. There are no dues or fees. The only requirement for membership is a desire to be free of nicotine. For information and meetings near you, call 877-TRY-NIC-A. That's 877-TRY-NICA. Or visit nicotine-anonymous.org. Let us share our experience, strength, and hope with you.
You're listening to Sports Talk 1240. Check us out every Sunday night at 8 p.m. right here on AM 1240 WGBB. And visit us online at sportstalk1240.com.
Making simple changes in your everyday travel choices makes a big difference to New York's air quality. Trip chain, use mass transit, rideshare, bike, or walk. Visit cleanairny.org to learn more. Clean Air New York, breathe it in. A public service message brought to you by the New York State Department of Transportation.
And now, back to Sports Talk 1240.
All right, we're back with Sports Talk 1240 WGBB Freeport, New York. Bill Donahue with you on this beautiful summer Sunday in August. Well, my next guest is a graduate of Sheepshead Bay High School in beautiful Brooklyn, New York, USA. He was a shortstop, third baseman, two-time All-Star who played his entire career in the American League. For the Boston Red Sox, I'd like to welcome to Sports Talk 1240 Rico Petroselli. Rico, good evening. Rico, you there?
Yes, yeah.
How you doing, Rico?
Oh, good, good.
Great to have you with us.
I got a cell, so sometimes it might crackle a little bit.
Oh, no worries, no worries. Now, Rico, growing up in the borough of churches, let's see, what team did you root for? Who were your favorite players?
Well, to give you an idea, I was the youngest of seven kids.
Okay.
Parents came over from Europe, you know, Italy, and didn't know very much about baseball, but my four other brothers and two sisters were all Yankee fans.
Okay.
And my first game was the Yankee Stadium with one of my brothers, and we went there a lot. Actually, every time we went, we saw the Boston Red Sox.
Okay.
Because Ted Williams was still playing, and my brothers really liked him, but they were staunch Yankee fans.
Okay.
And I liked the Yankees, and I liked the Dodgers. I really, really liked the Dodgers and the old Ebbets Field. And they had some great players, and the ballpark was small, and the fans were passionate. A little different, it looks actually similar to Fenway, at least in the past. They weren't very happy when the team didn't do well.
Right.
They let them know about it. So, but it was great. It was a great time to grow up, in New York and, played lots of sports, stickball and all, you know, in the schoolyards and, PS 206. And Sheepshead Bay High School was our first, we were the first graduating class. There was a brand new school at the time.
Okay.
So, I got the opportunity to play basketball and baseball. No football there, but a little bit of track, you know, cross country and all mm-hmm. that. And so it developed as an athlete, no doubt about it, in Sheepshead Bay.
Nice, okay. Now, you came up for good with the Bo Sox in 65. You played for the Hall of Famer Billy Herman. Then Tom Yawkey was still the owner of the ball club. Give me some of your impressions of Tom Yawkey.
Well, Tom was, loved baseball. He was a guy, in the years that I played, he was a little older, and he had mellowed somewhat.
Okay.
And from what I understand, and he had admitted it, so you know, he was kind of a racist.
Yeah.
Early on, yeah.
Right.
He had the opportunity to sign Jackie Robinson, Willie Mays, Newcomb, I think, a couple of other black players, but wouldn't do it because, unfortunately, a belief at the time. But the guy really changed. I mean, he changed his whole life. I guess he was a heavy drinker, too, at one time. But it's just a wonderful man. When we played, he would come down to the clubhouse and check on everybody, make sure, you know, things were going good. That's whether we won or lost, you know.
Yeah.
And so he really cared. And we all thought he was a great man.
Okay, yeah. That's exactly what I was getting at, Rico. Yeah, mm-hmm. Because I had read some things about Tom early on, and that's exactly what I was getting at, because I read books about Ted Williams and Tom and things like that, and I'm glad to hear that he had mellowed in his later life.
Yeah, yeah, he did. He got leukemia in, I think it was 76, early 76. And later on had passed away. He was actually, you know, right before free agency, so he didn't go through that. He didn't like to see the agents come up, you know.
Mm-hmm.
There was one guy, Earl Wilson. He was the only guy that had an agent.
Earl Wilson,
a guy named,
yeah.
Bob Wolf was also really was.
Oh,
was
Bob
great.
Wolf, yeah.
Sure.
Not
yeah,
the broadcaster, the yeah.
No,
yeah.
No, and so, you know. But they were, he and his wife were terrific owners, and we were very fortunate to play. I took care of everybody. We, you know, we made decent money for those years.
Good. Okay.
And then we got into the pennant in 67, and then things got really excited.
Good. Okay. Now, in 66, the Red Sox, that was fascinating while I was doing my homework to see. That was really the last down year of the Red Sox. They finished ninth in the American League, finished 72-90, 26 games behind the O's. But after 1966, the Red Sox wouldn't lose 90 games again until 46 years later in 2012.
Yeah.
Amazing.
Yeah, that was the beginning of the Red Sox Nation, as they call it.
Exactly,
you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, and... I was so happy to be a part of that. Of course, mm-hmm. I was a shortstop. The key guys on that team were Kari Ostrensky, who had a triple crown year, and Jim Lomborg was a Cy Young Award winner.
Right.
And the rest of us all had good years, you know, and went on to a World Series. Played against a great St. Louis team, Bob Gibson. But, you know, it was really the beginning of the excitement that brought baseball back, you know, the excitement of baseball back to Boston, New England area, those Red Sox fans who, you know, didn't go out to see the team because the team stunk.
Yeah,
you know,
to put it plainly, yeah.
Yeah. Hey, in 65, my first year, we lost 100 games. Terrible, terrible. I mean, it wasn't easy, but we did it. And then next year, 99, but we were starting to show a little improvement in the second half. They were bringing the young guys up. But then in 67, Dick Williams came on the scene and brought a lot of the young guys. And we all came up together. We probably had three-quarters of the team come up from the Red Sox system. As teams like the Yankees have done in the past, too. I mean, you know, it's great when you can do that. Unfortunately, nowadays, it's a little tougher.
Right.
But, yeah, I mean, it was terrific. It was really fun. Fun time to play.
How about, how much did Dick Williams have to do with that?
Well, he had a lot to do with it. He brought a great attitude because he was a utility guy for one or two years with the Red Sox and saw that, the Red Sox used to sign guys, you know, big right-handed hitters, slow, not good defensively, and, you know, just to hit off that wall or hit over it. And,
like the Boomer, George Scott, right?
Well, the Boomer was a great defensive first base.
Yeah.
But we had Dick Stewart, late Dick Stewart, and he could hit, but he couldn't field. He didn't want to field.
Dr. Strange
Glove. He was allergic.
Yeah.
His glove was allergic to the baseball. Let's put that way. And so, you know, it was terrible. 100 games. But he changed. He changed that attitude. We were going to play a little more like National League Baseball, hit and run. Get the bunts of guys over, the home runs would take care of itself. And, you know, it took us a little time to learn, but probably a third of the season in, you know, we really started to put it together, you know, made less mistakes. And all that time, you know, guys were learning and improving, and we couldn't wait to get to the ballpark because it was a fun time.
Right. Now, let's talk a little bit from your point of view, Rico. We're talking to Rico Petroselli tonight, Tony Canigliaro.
Hmm. Yeah, Tony C. was a great young player, a hitter. He was fearless at the plate. I mean, great home run hitter, natural home run swing. Was an RBI guy, very, very tough out with men on base. But he crowded the plate and had a little blind spot in off the plate inside for a ball and didn't react on that pitch or even further it, of course. But if you threw him a pitch on the corner, in the inside corner, forget it. Nobody could throw it by him. Nobody could throw it by him. It was incredible. But unfortunately, you know, they started trying to pitch him in to jam him, and now he started getting hit. I think he broke an arm one time. He got a fracture in his back when he was hit with a ball. And then, of course, I was on deck when he got hit in the face, just underneath the eye. And almost blinded him, but it made a miraculous comeback. But then it deteriorated again, and his career was over. He could have been a guy that hit five home runs or more because of the DH in the American League. You know, he wasn't a great fielder, but he was adequate. You know, in his later years, he could have been a DH and really had to hit a lot more home runs.
Real shame.
Yeah, it really was.
Now, excuse me, Tim. Excuse me, Rico. To talk about the World Series now, I remember that was probably the first World Series I remember as a kid. And being from Long Island, it was a big deal with Yaz being from Bridgehampton.
Right. Hey, I lived in Levittown for 3 years.
Did you?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, okay.
Brother, we said, let's go out there. I was still a kid, you know.
Yeah.
I'm not a kid. I had signed, you know, with the Red Sox.
Yeah.
In the offseason, that's where we lived, with my mother and father, who were elderly, and one of my brothers. And it was terrific. It was terrific. But my father was still working and decided to move back to Brooklyn because it was too far from, you know, the city.
Yeah.
The city. So anyway, but I lived out there.
Yeah, you wouldn't like it now, Rico.
Yeah. I haven't been out in a long time.
Now you hit two homers in game six. Now who was that off of? Dick Hughes?
Yeah, Dick Hughes was probably the third starter. Of course Gibson was first. And Dick had a sinker slider type pitcher. He threw decent speed and I saw the ball and I swung the bat and boom. Hit it on the good part of the bat. Second one went out to left center field. And I think we still hold a record. Diaz and Reggie Smith, I think, hit three homers in one inning.
Yeah, that's what it was. I remember reading that. Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, who knows? Those things, somebody will do it. Somebody will break it. It'll be four in one inning. So, but anyway, it was sixth game and, we needed it to get to the seventh. To face Bob Gibson again.
Yeah. Boy, was that a pitcher.
Yeah. Oh, he was something else.
Yeah.
They had a great team, the Cardinals. Right fielder was Roger Maris.
Exactly,
And Roger hit a home run against us in St. Louis. But what an outfielder he was. He doesn't get the credit for being an excellent outfielder, too.
No, very underrated, Maris, yeah.
And they were good. I mean, they had the best record in baseball, and we were mostly kids and happy to be there. And we took them to seven games. It would have been nice to win, naturally, but we were still happy with the year. And it was, like you said earlier, the beginning, you know, of a new era in Red Sox baseball.
That 67 club, I believe, goes down as one of the most popular clubs in Red Sox history.
Yeah. Yeah, you know what it was.
And rightfully so. Yeah.
In New York, we were made of the Mets. The Mets.
Yeah, it's comparable to the 69 Mets, definitely.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, we were 100-1 to win, and, 100-1, and we put it together. And, of course, the Mets, 69, were expected to win, but, you know, they went on, and they had a great year and won it all.
Right. Definitely. I agree with you 100%, Rico. Yeah. Now, in 68-69, you loved the league shortstops and fielding percentage. In 69, you set a record for home runs by a shortstop with 40.
Yeah.
You repeated as an all-star. But I believe I would compare you to like a Ripken Nomar-type shortstop in that your good field, also power hitting.
Yeah, I was I didn't come up like that, actually. I came up as a 150-pound shortstop. Good field and not too good a hitter.
Okay.
I actually tried switch hitting, my first year for around, I think I went to bat, left-handed, probably 15 times, no hits. So they told me go back right-handed, you know, maybe you'll hit the wall once in a while.
Yeah.
I said, thanks. I hope more than once in a while. But anyway, like most athletes, people who work their butts off, you know, usually, eventually, you know, pays off, and that's what I did, thanks to the coaches and who threw me batting practice, who worked with me on my hitting. I got closer to the plate at Fenway and opened up my stance. And Pete Runnels, who won a batting title.
Pete Runnels, yeah.
Pete Runnels, he was a batting instructor, and he told me, he said, hey, look out at right field, 380. Look out at right center, 420. Look out at left field. 365.
Yeah.
To the wall. And then, of course, 37 feet. But then down the line, 310 or whatever it was. Where would you rather hit? Where do you think you'd have a better chance? I said, I think left field, Pete. He says, that's it, son.
Yeah.
The ball of left field. I said, okay.
There you go. Yeah.
So I got right on the plate there. Wow, that's like Yankee Stadium now. Any lefty that goes up there, that's what they should do. Get right on that plate.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, get them to challenge you and just, hit a fly ball.
Right. Yeah. Oh, man.
Yeah. Not as easy, you know, as it sounds, but, you know, that's one of the things. Well, I think they do that. I think they try to get left-handers that, you know, with a little power that can get that ball in the air to right field. So McCann is one of the guys that I think eventually he will hit a bunch of home runs for the Yankees.
Well, I don't want to talk about the Yankees.
No, I'm just saying, you know, I know there's a lot of Yankee fans out there.
I'm a disgruntled Met fan.
Yeah, it is. I know, we went through it for years here. Being on the team, we knew what the fans were going through, how disappointed it was. We lost, in 72, we lost by half a game, the division, to the Tigers because of the strike.
Yeah.
The six-game strike. And when we lost the game, we knew the fans were going to be disappointed. Man, why? We felt bad for them, too.
Yeah.
So the players know. They want to do it for the fans.
Well, when the Sox got little Louis Aparicio in 71, Rico, you moved to third. How did you feel about that? He's a Hall of Famer, future Hall of Famer back then. Happy? Not happy, glad to do it?
I had no problem doing it. In fact, the Red Sox called me up in the winter meetings, Eddie Casco, the manager, and he said, we could get a third baseman, and we were eventually going to move over to third base because, you know, I was hitting home runs, knocking in some runs, and he says, we got a chance to get Aparicio for a couple of years. Would you move over to third now? And I said, of course. Am I still in the lineup? Yeah, of course. And so there was no problem with me. I didn't care. I'd try to do a good job at third base.
Yeah.
And we had Frank Malzone here, who was a great third baseman.
He sure was, yeah.
And Frank helped me out. He moved me around, the positioning. You know, I worked on the bunts and all that. And it worked out okay, you know. And Aparicio, of course, was, as you said, a Hall of Famer. He still had a couple of good years in him. And it was an honor to play beside him. That's great.
Well, I think you led the league in fielding percentage at third base when you moved over.
Yeah, but, you know, a guy named, named Brooks something.
The vacuum cleaner. Yeah.
Brooks Robinson, forget it. I don't care if I led the league by a third baseman by 100 points. Brooks was so good, so great. I mean, people just don't believe it. I mean, when we tell people how good he was, balls hit in a hole down the line. You think you got a double, a single, and all of a sudden, in Baltimore, the crowd cheers and say, "What the heck went on?" Boom. He goes down to first base.
Yeah.
Wow. Oh, great range. Quick first couple of steps.
You played with a bunch of new guys later on in the 70s, Rico. Speaking with Rico Petroselli tonight. Fisk, Teon, tell us about those guys.
Yeah, that was a heck of a team. That was a lot more talent than the 67 team.
Yeah.
Yeah, we had went over to first base.
Right.
Because Rice and Lynn were the rookies.
They came in, stepped in quite admirably.
Oh, Lynn won the MVP, Rookie of the Year MVP. In right field was Dwight Evans, great right fielder.
What a rifle, right?
Yeah, oh man, he made it look easy. And then short was Rick Burleson. Denny Doyle came over, but we got him in a trade. Came over to second base. Doing the catching was Carlton Fisk.
Another Hall of Famer, yeah.
Yeah. And then Teon. Yeah, Louis Teon and Rick Wise.
Rick Wise, right.
He won 19 for Teon, won 18. Roger Maret, 14 and 2. We just had a good all-around team. And then who do we play in the World Series? But a great team. You know, I mean, the team who had the best record in baseball again.
The Red Machine.
The Red Machine.
Mm-hmm.
Man, what a series it was. It was great. Just great.
What about the Spaceman, Rico? Didn't you have the Spaceman on the club too?
We had the Spaceman, He pitched real well. He made one mistake to Tony Perez, but he had gotten him out earlier in the earlier games. With that slow curveball, everybody gets on Bill for throwing it. But I knew we were in trouble when he threw that pitch to Tony Perez, and Tony, his bat was back.
Yeah.
The other times, you know, it went forward, he was fooled.
This time
the bat was back, I said, uh-oh, bang, he hit it.
Yeah.
He hit it, saw a mile, 10 miles.
Yeah.
No, but, you know, they were great. They were a great team.
Yeah, now.
Rose and,
Did you feel bad that you never won the series, Rico?
Yes.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Two times I was in it, you know. First time, 67. You know, we were fortunate to get into it. I mean, you know, we were 101 shot. But in 75, the last game, we were ahead 3-0. I thought we were going to win it. You know, and even as good as Cincinnati was, we were good too. But they came back, and you know, we lost 4-3, and it was so disappointing. You know, I figured, how many more chances would I get? You know, well, I got no more chances.
Yeah,
and that was it. So sure, but it was an honor to be in the World Series. It's every player's dream.
Yeah, I mean, you have guys like Ernie Banks who made it to the Hall, never played in a World Series.
Yeah, that's right. Well, there were a lot of little players, too, real good players. So, I mean, hey, you know, I'm grateful that I got the opportunity to a dream come true to play in the major leagues. To be honest with you, I was hoping at that time that out of high school, I would sign with one of the New York teams, you know, being a New Yorker, and it didn't happen. Both of them had signed players, and they hit their quota, as they said, and they just couldn't sign anybody else. And so Boston came on the scene with other teams, too, but I signed with Boston. So that worked out well. But I'm so grateful that I got the opportunity to play in the major leagues. Man alive. Boy, you know.
And then playing against guys who were my idols. Mickey Mantle was my idol as a kid. I played against him. 65. Oh my God, I walked. He was first base. Oh, I didn't know what to do. My knees were knocking.
You got any good Mantle stories, Rico?
Well, not that you can tell us. Well, no. I mean, we didn't know Mickey what he did off the field, you know.
Yeah.
But you know the story with him. He is no male in his family lived past 55 years old.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah, and Mickey, that would get you a little nervous. You might have a few cocktails, you know, thinking about that for a while. But
yeah.
But anyway. And then Roberto Clemente, Hank Aaron, Willie Mays, what a player. Played against him, Sandy Koufax.
That generation had to be one of the greatest in baseball history.
Oh, the All-Star games, all those guys were in that?
Yeah. I mean, you had
McCovey,
Seaver,
oh,
Marichal,
yeah.
Koufax.
Faced Marichal, faced him. Guys that were just terrific. I mean, great, Hall of Famers. So that, too, was something I look at and say, man, wow, I got that opportunity. Roberto Clemente in spring training, especially. Roberto Clemente was superstitious. He wanted to hit the ball hard, but he didn't want to get hit. He wanted to save them for the season.
Yeah.
He thought, yeah. And so he'd hit a line shot, the base hit, get mad running down first. And then when he'd hit a line drive, ran at somebody, he'd be happy walking back to the dugout.
He'd save his hits.
Roberto, I wish I could do that.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's amazing.
Those guys, something else.
What a crew. Yeah, I'm heading up to Cooperstown next week. There's no place I enjoy more, Rico, than heading up to that little town. I'll tell you.
Oh, what, that's a great place to go.
What a magical little town.
Yeah, every father should take his son who, you know, they like baseball. It's just great. Great to go along with your dad.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Now you had some success minor league managing, with the Paw Sox, didn't you?
Yeah, man, it's with the Paw. I managed 2 years with the White Sox organization. Ken Harrelson, when he became general manager.
The Hawk, yeah.
The Hawk, and, he hired me, Dick Allen and Bob Bolin and Alvin Dark and a bunch of guys that he do, you know, which most of the guys do. We thought it'd be a 4 or 5 year plan, and it ended up, Hawk was let go after 1 year. I thought the biggest mistake he made was he fired, just went into the Hall of Fame, darn it, blank.
Tony La Russa.
La Russa.
Yeah.
he fired Tony La Russa. I said, uh-oh, that's not too good a move, Hawk.
Yeah.
Wait a minute. And then they let him go. But Tony went to Oakland and had great success there. And so anyway, I managed 2 years there. It was great. We won the playoffs there. We won the championship there. Then they went back with the Red Sox, managed in Pawtucket. We got to the playoffs. And then I coached in hitting in infield, in A ball, you know, in Double A, Nomar Garcia-Para came on the scene. When the Sox were in Trenton, I used to go there, you know, and work with them. So
sure.
That was fun.
Great. Okay. Well, Rico, it's been a real pleasure having you with us tonight, speaking about your great career and the great times. Like to thank you for sharing part of your Sunday night with us.
I really appreciate it, and had a good time. Thanks a lot. Good luck.
Rico Petrocelli, folks. Well, thanks for joining me tonight for Sports Talk 1240. I'd like to thank my guests, Kevin Mitchell and Rico Petrocelli, my engineer, Brian Graves, and you for joining us. Tune in next Sunday night at 8 for more Sports Talk 1240. I'll be back with you Sunday night, August 24th. Till then, Bill Donahue, wishing you a good evening, folks.
The views expressed in the previous program did not necessarily represent those of the staff, management, or owners of WGBB.